Maine's growing gig economy. There have always been people in Maine who piece together different jobs to make a living, from the bus driver who also does home repairs to the musician who waits tables. The pandemic forced some to take on additional jobs in order to make ends meet, while others took the chance to reconfigure their careers. I'm Cindy Hahn. Join me for a conversation about the gig economy, what it is, how many in Maine take part in it, and how part-time, freelance, independent contracting, and entrepreneurship help make up this growing segment of the workforce here in Maine and across the country. And we invite you to share your experience as a gig worker. This show is part of our special series on Maine's evolving economy. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Some hear the word gig and think of musicians or performers getting hired for a show, but it can encompass all sorts of work that's either part-time, flexible, or independent. Today, we'll talk about how gig work is becoming more prevalent, in some ways prompted by the pandemic, and how the gig economy will change what work looks like in the future. My guests are Richard Bilodeau, professor at the University of Southern Maine School of Business, where he's also faculty chair of Corporate Partners, and he is an entrepreneur. And Terry Johnson, partner and business solutions advisor with Practical Decisions. He serves as a mentor to entrepreneurs, and he's president of the Association of Consulting Expertise. We invite your comments and questions. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page or to Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. This program is part of Maine's Evolving Economy, a series of Maine Calling shows about the economic effects of the pandemic. Terry, let's go to you first, and just to help us understand some terminology. When we talk about the gig economy, what does that mean, and what counts as a gig worker?
It can be very complex because there are so many types of gig workers doing so many different types of things. Essentially, the way I think of it as independent workers. They're not a direct employee of the clients that they're doing work for. But they are being paid directly by that, not through some organization that they are an employee of. So it can be everything from Uber drivers, Uber and Lyft drivers, independent consultants, independent freelancers who are doing marketing work, web page work. It's really a huge universe of possibilities of what people could be doing in the gig economy.
And do you have a sense of how prevalent this is in Maine?
I've seen somewhere recently that we believe that the gig workforce is now larger than the timber industry in Maine, and the projections are that the gig workforce will be half of the workforce in the U.S. by 2027.
Wow. So actually, though, Maine has had a gig economy from I guess the beginning of time, right? People living in rural areas or island communities, they're often wearing a lot of hats. They might build boats and work at the post office and whatever else. So is that comparable to the kind of gig work that we're talking about today?
If they're doing it as an independent, yes, I think so. If you're a full-time employee at Bath Iron Works or something and you're selling honey on the side, you may be a gig worker when you're selling honey, but not necessarily when you're working for Bath Iron Works.
Okay, so all kinds of combinations possible. Richard, I wanted to hear from you. The pandemic has changed all of our lives in so many ways. What effect did it have on people seeking out gig work? Was that a necessity over the past year with people losing their jobs or leaving more traditional jobs?
I think in some cases, absolutely. You know, when we think about what has happened in terms of employment and the way we think about employment since the start of the pandemic, some people have lost jobs. Some people have chosen to not stay in jobs because of stress or changes in the work environment, while others looked at the pandemic as a way to simply explore something new. And I think as more of us started working from home and realizing that it was possible to have a productive day working from home, And as things like disruption in childcare impacted many folks and many families, one of the things that we've seen in the gig economy is this trend for people to move into it, because there is, to a certain extent, a lot of autonomy and control in your schedule. You can decide to do as little or as much work is available. You can spend some time finding someone who might be a better fit for your schedule that might be looking for you to develop a website or to create a marketing campaign. Often the work, like with consulting, if you're doing independent consulting, can be done in off hours. So if you have childcare issues, you may find the work fits your schedule better. So I think for a lot of us, it made it seem possible. I think the other thing is with Gen Z and people graduating from college, one of the things we're seeing is there was somewhat of a desire to continue to have more control and autonomy over what we do for work. And so as a result, we're seeing a lot of folks in Gen Z entering the gig economy and not thinking about traditional employment, because there was this recognition that A, the job market wasn't great, but also seeking out and trying to navigate being a new employee in a large organization might have been very challenging during the pandemic. And so you would have more control or more perceived control by participating in the gig economy.
Okay, I'm going to actually go right into a Facebook comment from Catherine, just because while we're defining things, this might be a good one to address. She says, I hope you will make a distinction between gig worker and people starting their own business. Starting one's own business or working for yourself doesn't necessarily make someone a gig worker. Is that, it's a hard distinction to make, right, Terry?
Yeah, that's a good point. My example with selling honey was not a great example because of that. I'd also say that the gig economy is not just remote workers. If you're a full-time employee, but you're working remotely, that's different. I will say that once people start doing that, it starts opening their eyes around the possibilities of what they could do in other ways that isn't a traditional employment.
Right. In fact, that is the aspect that the pandemic, you both mentioned this, the remote work lends itself to the gig economy. There's more, you can work from anywhere, anytime, there's more flexibility. So everyone's eyes have been open to that in this past year. And is that going to cause a surge in people doing gig work? Terry?
Yeah, I think it's certainly got a potential to do that. I think that the remote working capabilities. Again, people see that I have a skill. Now I can have a skill that's marketable in and of itself, not just embedded within a corporation someplace. And I can create my own business to do that, to deliver that skill to the workers. I mean, the business word that's in that is starting your own business. I consider an independent gig worker who's freelancing, they have started their own business. I consider them an entrepreneur. They have to take care of their business. They have to market their business. They have to continually develop their skills. They have to find their clients. So it really is a all-encompassing task. And for some people, that's might be a bit of a stretch. And so it's easier to go get a regular job first until you learn how to do all those things and then join the gig economy later.
Richard, can you talk about that also, the benefits of gig work in terms of sort of testing the waters or trying something out on a smaller scale first before you dive in further?
Sure. You know, early in my career, I owned a small consulting company. And one of the things that I learned in those early days is owning a small consulting company was not for me. So when my consulting clients had issues, they called me 24 hours a day. I had to employ five people and I was not ready to employ five people. I probably mucked up a lot of stuff.
Hey, this is Jonathan.
Related to like thinking about HR practice, et cetera, et cetera. And so what the gig economy would have done, if there was more of a gig economy, it might have allowed me to say, all right, let me test out what it would be like to be a marketing consultant. So I'll have one contract, but maybe I can do all these other things at the same time. You know, one of the things when I think about some of my students that have entered the gig economy, you know, many of them are doing, you know, things that are almost polymath in their nature, where they're doing some marketing, they're doing some design, they're doing some construction or contract labor, they're doing some accounting. And this is allowing them to get a sense of what work would be like in all these fields. Now, for some people, they decide, wait a minute, accounting is the thing for me. And maybe they go on to set up their own accounting company. Maybe they go on to work for a big accounting firm. But the gig economy allows us to go out and do some testing. I have a student who's in Nashville right now. And one of the things that he's doing is gigs around music production. And it turns out he's good at it. So now he's considering it as a career. I think he would have never gambled to try to find a job in that field because he felt too inexperienced if it were the sort of traditional employment route. So I think the gig economy gives us some flexibility. Another thing I do want to mention, I think there's a lot of fluidity in some of what we're talking about, like being an entrepreneur in a startup or running a consulting company or being a musician. To a certain extent, all that work is gig. You know, when we think about the buzz term gig economy, we think more, or many people think more about, oh, someone on Freelancer says they're available to write website content and someone needs some website content written. And so we do this match and people go out and that work gets done job by job. But, you know, I do think there are cases, you know, if you look at all of the co-working spaces that popped up around Portland prior to the pandemic, this to me is a great example of a hybrid between entrepreneurial venture and gig economy, because you have a bunch of people freelancing that are working in the same space, doing independent work, but also sharing work, developing this ecosystem where they can refer work to one another. And I think all of that is gig work, but the reality is many of the folks in that situation go on to start a venture. And so, you know, I think the way in which we count is interesting and the way in which we describe is interesting. I think the gig economy has become part of the sort of incubation that happens in the sort of employment and entrepreneurial ecosystem. And so, you know, often when I think about startup entrepreneurs, to a certain extent, until they get established, they are just doing gigs. And then at some point, they may function more, or have a business that functions more like a traditional larger business, but they may continue to just do gigs because that's what makes economic sense.
That's so interesting. Well, joining us on the line now is Paul Shea. He is Associate Professor of Economics at Bates College. Professor Shea, thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. So I understand there was a Federal Reserve survey that said the gig economy shrunk during the pandemic. What were those findings and why did it decline?
Well, it's a little surprising. I would have expected it to grow because certainly there's a lot of anecdotes that suggest people have kind of resorted to the gig economy during the pandemic. But the Fed just came out about 3 weeks ago. They do this every year where they ask about the gig economy. They also use a very inclusive definition of who's in the gig economy, which includes about 30% of U.S. workers. Their definition is about as broad as it can get. It's including anybody who even just buys and sells a significant amount of stuff on eBay, as well as things like Uber and Lyft, and also more traditional gig routes. For instance, just providing childcare is another example. And what they found is that there was about a 4% decrease during the pandemic in the number of U.S. workers that were participating either full or part-time in the gig economy. And the reason for that is, even though there's so much attention paid to these delivery apps and new aspects of the gig economy, more traditional components of the gig economy, like childcare, were impacted adversely by the pandemic, just like traditional employment relationships were negatively impacted. So the gig economy, even though it has been trending upwards in recent decades, actually shrunk a little bit in 2020 and into the beginning of 2021.
Okay, so some of that does depend on that really broad net that they cast in defining it then, because it included, like you said, Uber and Lyft drivers, that those are gig workers, but then that also, they suffered at the beginning part of the pandemic, right? and other childcare and all of that. So if we look ahead then beyond the pandemic, do you think the gig economy is poised to grow and be a bigger part of how Americans work?
Well, let me just add, they also did ask what percentage of workers are we might think of as full-time gig workers, meaning they're getting at least 20 hours or most of their income from the gig economy. And that shrunk as well. That actually fell from about, I think, 9 to 8% of the U.S. workforce. So it wasn't just the expanded definition that caused the gig economy to shrink a little bit. But going to your other question, the reason the gig economy has grown in recent decades, it's pretty straightforward. It's technology. And I think those technological forces that have made it easier to participate in the gig economy, there's no reason to think that those are going to abate in the near future. So I would expect that we're going to see continued growth in the gig economy. This growth has been overstated by some studies. It's surprisingly hard to measure who's in the gig economy exactly. I think we're going to continue to see kind of a gradual trend in the next 10 years in the number of workers who are participating in this. It's not going to become a majority of the workforce. It's not going to primarily supplant traditional employment arrangements, but I would expect to see continued growth.
And will that be good for the economy?
Probably. One thing that I think that gets overlooked a lot, the majority of gig workers report very high satisfaction, much higher than people who are working for a traditional job. Most people who are in the gig economy have chosen to do this. It's a relatively small number that are kind of being forced into the gig economy because they're not able to find a traditional employer. So as long as that relationship continues to hold, the expansion of the gig economy, I think, is largely beneficial. It's giving people increased flexibility in the labor market, which most of them like. So I think this is something fundamentally that we should welcome. It doesn't mean that there isn't the risk for some abuse out there. You know, you can imagine some companies might try to abuse this by declaring people who are, in fact, employees as independent contractors. But apart from that, this is fundamentally, I think, going to be a beneficial thing for the U.S. labor market.
Okay, well, great. Thank you. That was Paul Shea. He teaches economics at Bates College. And Terry and Richard, he did mention the flip side, the risks a little bit. We talked a lot about benefits of gig work. Richard, can you address what some of the risks are for either the employers or I mean, you know, if somebody's working on a part-time basis for an employer or if it's just a gig worker themselves, what risks are involved?
Sure. So, I mean, there are a number of risks depending on the type of gig we're talking about. But let's take the example of you're relying on someone to develop your marketing campaigns for social media and for mobile marketing. And let's say you sell a product. You know, there is the chance that the person you hire will not be a good match. There also is the chance that the person you hire may have a schedule that is flooded with things to do, and you know they may be over-gigged, so to speak, and so they may not be able to deliver on time. And so there could be a whole bunch of challenges related to fit, related to quality of work, and then for some organizations, related to the degree of control. I mean, one benefit of having employees is if all of a sudden we have to quickly pivot to do something else, for the people we employ, we can retool them and we can basically implement new strategies to get work done. That might be challenging in the gig economy. And, you know, one of the things that we saw in the pandemic is a number of companies had to pivot and do something different in order to survive. And so depending on the nature of the relationship and the type of work, that could be a challenge. I think for gig workers, you know, there's some risk. You have to insure yourself. And so if you have limited options for things like health insurance, this could create some amount of risk or dissatisfaction. You also have to pay your own benefits. I mean, most people are paying you to do a job. They're not paying you to then have a vacation. So there's not paid time off. There's not sick time. So I think all of those risks we have to think about. You know, one thing I do think is interesting that I will quickly echo before we go to break, that Paul was touching upon is that much of the HR function has changed in this country. And so, you know, one of the things we see is HR is often viewed through the lens of risk management. And certainly it may be perceived to be less risky to have fewer employees than to have gig workers. And so, you know, I think another trend that's going to drive us in the future as a result of the pandemic is we've gotten more comfortable with this notion that not everyone has to be in an office.
Okay, well, it is time to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Down East Acadia, inviting you to get outdoors and discover your wild side. Hike, boat, camp, swim. Plan your visit at truemaine.net. And the Cedars Memory Care Assisted Living Household, now open. Schedule a visit today at thecedarsportland.org.
This week on Maine's Political Pulse, the legislature lurches to the finish line with significant changes to election laws and the fate of several big ticket bills still uncertain. We'll discuss the highlights. Join me, Steve Missler, and Mal Leary for Maine's Political Pulse. Tune in Friday evenings at 5:35 to hear the latest political news and analysis. Subscribe through your podcast app and to the weekly newsletter anytime at mainepublic.org/pulse.
Maine Public is pleased to be a media sponsor of the Portland Bach Experience, a 10-day festival of innovative programs from full orchestral events to outdoor performances. The concerts will be performed live at venues throughout Midcoast and Southern Maine from June 11th through the 20th and include in-person and virtual viewing options. Maine Public members are eligible for 15% off tickets. For details on the Portland Bach Experience and the Maine Public member discount, please visit mainepublic.org and click on events.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. We're talking about the gig economy, why people are turning to more flexible and independent work, and what that means for Maine going forward. Joining me, Terry Johnson, business advisor with Practical Decisions, Maine Mentor Network Manager, and head of the Association of Consulting Expertise, and Richard Bilodeau, entrepreneur, consultant, and lecturer at the USM School of Business. And joining us on the line now is, hold on, I think I'm getting her. Joining us on the line is Meg Charette. She is the co-founder of Launchpad, an arts incubator, and she's a music booker. She also works as operations assistant and venue coordinator at Oxbow Brewing Company. Thanks for joining us, Meg.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. So I just listed a few different jobs that you have. So you definitely count as a gig worker. Tell us about how this combination came about.
So I had traditional jobs in the past and was kind of always doing these side hustles, if you will, on the side. I'm not a musician, but I would organize shows and work with musicians. And over time, I slowly just moved away from my desk jobs and my office jobs and started Launchpad. And through Launchpad, started working with all these artists in Maine, booking festivals, booking venues. And it kind of went on from there. So, yeah, I have four or five jobs making a full-time job, basically.
Yeah, is that challenging to juggle the different jobs, or what are the challenges of being a gig worker?
I don't think it's challenging in the way that most people would think. I think it's challenging that you're always kind of looking ahead and you're really focusing on your relationships. So relationships with musicians and venues and festivals and just any other people in your community or in your state. So in that way, it's challenging if that's not something that you find a strong suit. For me, it was a better fit, and I heard mentioned earlier the satisfaction rate of having this type of employment, and I can speak for that very highly. It is more satisfying to me to work in this way, so I understand why musicians do it as well.
Yeah. What about, we did talk just a little while ago about risks in terms of things like insurance and all of that. Are you okay on that end?
Yeah, you figure it out. I think after you've done it for a certain period of time, you become very good at being your own advocate and finding these ways and these channels to solve those problems. So at this point, I've been doing this fully as the way I make my income, probably about 5 years. And I've got it figured out now.
That's great. So do you plan on doing this for good indefinitely?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've had previously, before the pandemic, I had a full-time job that I had insurance at Port City Music Hall working for state. So I was doing that, and that was like my, you know, my full-time first gig, and I still had these other jobs I was working. And then since the pandemic, like everyone, a lot of that has changed, and I've shifted over to Oxbow, and now that is my first primary with Launchpad. And, you know, it's challenging. It's different. From the pandemic, I think we all learned that pivoting, I hate that word now, but
I know.
You pivot and you find ways to make it work. And it's interesting now just to see even just the musicians that I work with doing the same exact thing. A lot of them over the year kind of stopped doing their full-time job because it either disappeared completely or they just decided they didn't want to do it anymore. So there's this massive regrouping, even in the gig economy, of people kind of trying to figure out what they're doing now, especially since restrictions have been lifted.
Right. I guess we'll go with regrouping instead of pivot from now on. That is what you're a great example. Right. Well, thank you for sharing your story. You're kind of a model of how it can work well. So Meg Charette co-founded Launchpad, and she works in the music industry, and she is also at Oxbow Brewing Company. Thank you so much for calling, Meg. Terry, do you want to comment on what Meg's doing and what kind of example that is?
Yeah, I think it's a great example because she exhibits the, I guess you'd call it the scrappiness that you have to do all the different tasks. You have to think about, you know, how are you going to make all of this work? How are you going to make your business work for you? And so it can be very difficult. And if you're a person that likes a lot of intense focus, it may not be, you know, the right thing for you. But the good news about the gig economy is it's actually, I think Richard said this earlier, it's easy, relatively easy to try something and just see if how you like it, as opposed to, you know, committing to a career.
Right. And I guess that suits young people, obviously, for just jumping in and starting out that way. But what about for Richard? Can you talk about for older people? Is this still something that's suitable for someone at the tail end of their career?
Absolutely. And in fact, for many folks who retire and retirement isn't for them, it's a great way to get back into doing something without committing to full-time employment or regular employment. You know, it's very interesting. We are going through one of the businesses I own here in Maine. We are going through and auditing our financials and just making sure that our accounting house is in order. And we just hired a gig accountant from Florida. And he's a retired professional and he's great. And he does a couple of jobs a year that he thinks are going to be interesting. And, you know, for us, it's a great opportunity because we're getting a really seasoned pro who has lots of experience, but we're working with him in this more one-off relationship. You know, one of the things that we shied away from is going to develop a relationship with, we already have an accountant that we like. So we're just trying to get a second look. We didn't want to have to go have a relationship with another accounting firm, but this created an opportunity for us to get that second look in a way that worked for us. And this person who is coming sort of partially out of retirement because he doesn't want to be fully retired. So I think, you know, across the age spectrums, definitely the gig is a great opportunity.
And Terry, you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, I'm a perfect example of that. So I spent 35 years in the high-tech industries, full-time employed by large corporations, and have now been in the gig economy for the last 6 years. And, you know, I'm not one that's going to retire anytime soon in a real sense of retirement, but it gives an opportunity to get involved in things that you want to get involved with and actually, you know, make some a living doing that. And it can be as an independent contractor for someone. I mean, the work that I do for the Maine Center of Entrepreneurs, I contract with them to do that. So that's a part of the gig economy. The work as I do as an independent consultant is obviously a part of the gig economy.
So you're living what you're talking about. That's great. On the line now with us is Tracy Halverson. She's based in Easton, where she operates rental properties, including yurts. And she also works as a Maine guide. Tracy, thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. So tell me a little bit more about what you do. You sound like a very busy person.
Yeah. So I think for me, I had visions of being a teacher and a coach when I first started, fresh out of college, and I did do that. But for me, I saw that teaching in a school that was very that felt confining to me. So from there, I also had two parents that did multiple jobs. So I kind of grew up with that. My dad was a manager of a company, but he also was self-employed. So he'd come home at night and he'd also did a little side business of fixing and selling depth sounders. And my mom was, she had some rentals and she also worked full-time as a postal clerk and she had a cleaning business. So I kind of grew up with so-called parents that had multiple jobs going. So I think seeing that, I decided that after teaching, I got married and my husband and I decided to start a rental business, which we did full-time together for years. He has since decided to do something else. So the rental business is something that I enjoy. We try to do all of the work ourselves. And from there, I just kind of started to brainstorm what kind of a business could I do that only involved the outdoors. And that led to me guiding women's groups about 20 years ago. And I just saw how it was life-changing for them in so many aspects. And so I started doing that as kind of a side gig and really enjoy getting people outside, doing the Allegash River is one of my passions. And then the yurt business, I was also teaching outdoor pursuit classes at our University of Maine at Presque Isle. And I saw how the students were being changed by having this class outdoors. So I resigned from that teaching position so I could start this yurt business. And that has been a lot of fun. You know, all three of my, or I guess the vision for my yurt business was to use it for the guiding and also another certification that I went to get in Maryland is called Shinrin Yoku, which because of COVID, I have not been able to get that up and running yet, but that is also part of the vision. And also I do outdoor education for our local schools. And so
wow.
The yurt is being used right now as on Airbnb, but that wasn't really my vision, but COVID kind of led it that way because everything got shut down. So, And it's been really fun. I've been able to meet some really cool people from all over the United States and also from Canada. And so it's been fun.
That's amazing. Well, thank you, Tracy, for sharing your experience. It sounds like you've got a lot going on there. So that was Tracy Halverson. She operates yurts and rental apartments, and she's also a Maine guide as well. Terry, can you talk a little bit about the fact that Tracy's an example where here in Maine, the gig economy can often be based on what Maine has to offer, the outdoors and that kind of thing, not so much of a high-tech kind of gig work?
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing about the gig economy is that it's not just about working remotely. It's also about using what you have for skills around the needs that are around you. What are the resources that we have here? It goes back to that all-inclusive definition that we talked about that Paul had talked about and we talked about at the beginning. Is it casts a really wide net of lots of side hustles. At some level, though, I think that it would be helpful to start categorizing that in some way so that we can support the various groups with support that they need. One of the things that I've found is, and I've worked in a lot in the economic development world in Maine, the focus is all on companies and it's about job creation. But if you think about the gig workforce, it's a significant part of the workers in Maine. And they need support as well, particularly in terms of just starting out. What do I need to do? How do I do that? So we try to do some of that with at the Association for Consulting Expertise. But I think that there needs to be a more focused effort to try to help people build their businesses, build their gig workforce.
Okay, I'm going to go to an email from Elizabeth. She says, I am quite concerned about the fact that gig workers don't have the security of health insurance and retirements when they don't work for a business. Young people may not be aware of the high cost of paying for these things or that few people can survive on Social Security alone without separate retirement savings. They may also be tempted to get paid under the table, so they may not even know it will affect their total Social Security benefits someday. Thank you for discussing some of the downsides of the gig economy, which seem to favor gig employers. Richard, can you chime in about that?
Sure. I mean, I think there are certainly risks. You know, the other thing that I would add to the list is what I call predatory gigging, where you end up working with a website and they take a high commission for helping you get matched to a gig job. So, you know, you may be able to set your rate, but you might not understand unless you really read through the terms and conditions that in some cases people add their percentage on top of it if they're making the match. In other cases, they take it from your rate. So I think absolutely we have to think through these issues. But I, you know, one of the things that I'm obviously a big advocate for, education. You know, I think we've got a lot of great programs here in Maine at the high school level. We have Jobs for Maine Grads, for example, at the community college system and in the four-year degree program system. We have a lot of great programs where we talk about entrepreneurship and we talk about being your own boss and employing yourself. And I think these issues are certainly becoming top of mind. I mean, the other thing that I will say about Gen Z, younger folks tend to have a great sense of understanding how the world operates. So my experience with my own students at USM is that they're not naive necessarily about things related to insurance or about planning for retirement. They are thinking about those things, but I agree with Elizabeth that we need to do more to make sure everyone is educated about the potential downsides. And, you know, I think as I mentioned earlier, when we sort of look through the lens of HR being a risk management function, absolutely, there might be more benefits or perceived benefits to companies than to people doing gig work because they don't have to worry about taxes or insurance or any of the other sort of suite of benefits that we would typically offer to our employees. So the good news is I think a lot of people understand what they're getting into, but I do think there's room for additional sort of education and awareness.
Okay, we are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Real Maine, a program of the Maine Bureau of Agriculture featuring Maine-grown and made agricultural products. Learn more at realmaine.com. And Eastern Basements, a division of Maine-owned Eastern Mold Remediation, offering crawl space repairs and waterproofing. EasternBasements.com.
During the pandemic, live audio chats on apps like Clubhouse and Twitter have taken off, letting people connect online when they can't in real life.
They wanted you to feel like you were hosting people in your living room. Well, that's my thing. I love to have people in my living room.
Meet the people becoming audio stars and the social media companies hoping to turn a fad into a permanent boom. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us. That's this afternoon between 4 and 6:30 right here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public News Connect is a new initiative developed to provide the top stories from Maine Public News in translation, thanks to the tremendous support of the Maine Immigrants' Rights Coalition, Amjambo Africa, and other community partners. Maine Public News Connect releases new video reports every Friday afternoon by 3 o'clock. Our pilot program includes news translated into French, Spanish, Portuguese, and Somali. You can find Maine Public News Connect reports online at mainepublic.org and on our social media platforms today at 3 p.m.
Welcome back. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, more people are joining the gig economy in Maine. We're discussing how that will change what work looks like in the future. Our guests are Richard Bilodeau. He teaches at USM School of Business, and he's an entrepreneur and consultant. And Terry Johnson. He works as a business advisor, consultant, and mentor with expertise in entrepreneurship. We welcome you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. And we'll go now to Melanie, who is calling in from South Berwick. Hi, Melanie. What did you want to talk about?
Yeah. Oh, thanks for taking my call. And thanks for this topic. I have been a freelancer for almost 5 years now. And the first 15 years of my career, I worked in a traditional 9-to-5 office professional. And before becoming a mom, I really respected the philosophy of leaning in and women staying in the workforce. But becoming a mom about 5 years ago, I had two young children and I had two aging parents. And the reality is that the 9-to-5 workforce, there's not support for households to have two full-time working parents in that setting. So freelancing for my family has been very satisfying for me and really allowed us to have the flexibility to be there for our kids, be there for our parents. And it's also been great to be able to set my own hourly wage rather than having to sort of fight for raises every year in a traditional setting. So I think freelancing is a great, great opportunity for working women and moms and caregivers.
Well, thanks for sharing your example, Melanie. I wanted to ask about that, actually, Terry, whether the gig economy lends itself better to women than to men. There's a lot of women who dropped out of the workforce during the pandemic for certain reasons relating to childcare a lot of times.
The childcare reasons, I think that I'm not sure it's would be better for women versus men, but I think it might be more convenient depending on your situation. If you start looking at some of the issues that we've got in a state relative to things like housing prices and child care and all of those types of things, something has to give somewhere along the line. And so when you have two full-time parents that are working outside the home all the time, it becomes problematic. And with those costs, and so whether it's the mother or the father who decide to work, join the gig economy and do childcare, I think it's a great opportunity to take care of some of those burdens.
Okay, I'm going to read an email from Diane. She writes, I live in the western mountains of Maine, where part-time, seasonal, and gig work is extremely common. For many years, I held a handful of part-time jobs and gigs that helped me maintain my passion for work, as well as quality of life. However, there were two big barriers or disincentives to that lifestyle: healthcare and mortgage lending. The ability to find affordable health care if you don't work somewhere that offers is really difficult. I found that I had to maintain part-time employment somewhere that offered coverage in order to be able to afford it. And when we applied for a mortgage, we had to jump through so many hoops to prove to the bank that we could afford the payment. That has been my experience here in Western Maine. I loved working for a non-traditional schedule, but I don't feel our larger economy culture has caught up with the needs of this type of work. Richard.
You know, absolutely. I mean, I think as we have talked about throughout the program, we need to think about things related to not just healthcare and insurance, but also paid time off from work, the balance between work life and non-work life. And there are always going to be settings where people, particularly those that are either lending us money or providing us with credit, are looking for us to have more what is considered to be stable employment. You know, the good news is I think some of that model is changing. There seem to be more opportunities developing in the insurance industry to provide insurance where you can join groups, where groups of individuals get insured just like a company would get insured. It does take some research, and hopefully that field continues to evolve. I mean, I think the other thing when it comes to lending, it's really important, and Terry, I don't know how you feel about this, but being an entrepreneur for much of my life, I think it's really important, and it's always been important to have a good working relationship with a bank. And, you know, when I've been gainfully employed, I've had a good working relationship with a bank. When I've done more consulting type of work, I've maintained that relationship. And so I think, you know, one of the things we often think about if we're going to borrow money to get a mortgage and we go, okay, I'll just go to this bank and get a mortgage. But, you know, if we get back to some of the more traditional ways, when you look at how people lend money, you know, there are the five C's of lending, of which one of the C's is character, which sort of relates not only to what your credit report is, but also relates to if the bank sort of thinks they can take a risk and loan you money, so to speak. So, you know, I definitely agree with this post. I think that there are challenges, but there are ways to think about the challenges. And, you know, I think very, you know, I'm sure that the person writing in from Western Maine is similar to many people who do maintain a regular part-time job, either because they need to borrow money or they need health insurance or for some reason. But hopefully we see that as the gig economy continues to grow, the way in which we think about these issues continues to evolve, because I think there's a real opportunity there.
Terry, go ahead.
I think that a good relationship with a bank is always good. A good relationship with an accountant and a lawyer is always good. I think, though, that in terms of the overall systems, the systems are all put in place to support traditional employment. Yet we've got a growing segment of the population that is in the gig economy, and the systems need to be rethought in a way to help be inclusive with that, so that we can support particularly new gig workers in the same way that we support new businesses. And we can support people that have been in it for a long time with systems that recognize that if you've been in it a long time, you're probably a pretty good credit risk, and those types of things. So I think that that whole, the systems approach to it and trying to make it not invisible anymore. I think one of the problems with gig workers is when we're looking at it from an economic development standpoint, we don't see them. And I think we need to find a way to make them visible.
What about other resources? If someone's looking at this and not sure where to even begin, where would they turn?
Well, so an organization like mine with the Association for Consulting Expertise is a great place to start, because it will do a couple of things. It helps build your network so that you can find experts in various things. You may be able to find someone else who has been there and done that and can walk you through a lot of those things. The SBDC is a good place to go. SCORE is a great place to go.
Back up for a second. SBDC and SCORE, you want to just say a little bit about what those stand for?
Yeah, the Small Business Development Center.
Yeah.
And SCORE is an organization that provides mentorship for entrepreneurs.
Right.
They'll also work with freelancers. Maine Center for Entrepreneurs, we have the Top Gun program that happens every year. This last year, we had two brand new consultants go through the Top Gun program. So it's not just about a traditional business.
Well, speaking of resources, Richard, also, I'm interested in hearing more about these platforms or sites that people can go to find gig work. I understand there are more and more of those cropping up where someone can make bids on a job, and other, from both sides, it's beneficial. I guess you can bid for jobs and people looking for talent can find them that way.
I think we're seeing more and more of them. The traditional one that I often think of is freelancer.com. Although, you know, another thing that I find interesting more and more companies are just putting the word out there. You know, I have in my own Facebook and social media feeds, I see the companies that I've liked or I'm following saying, hey, we're looking for someone to do this or to do that. So I think there are all of these sort of ways in which we communicate and use social media platform mechanisms. Then there are specific sites. I think the most important thing is to really read carefully the terms and conditions and to really do some diligence, you know, make sure you check out, read through ratings and reviews. You know, one of the things that I often say to folks when they talk about ratings and reviews, they go, oh, look at this. There were 100 five-star ratings and 5 one-star ratings. I'm like, read all the one-star ratings. Really get a sense of the things that people did not like or drove their dissatisfaction. You know, and the other thing is reach out and ask. You know, I am a big fan of, you know, when more restrictions lift and when we can get back to co-working spaces, for example, some are back and running and some are still getting back up to running. But, you know, it's a wonderful opportunity to talk to people in the gig economy to get a sense of where they're looking. So, you know, I think, so there are lots of online resources that I think are good. You know, you can Google freelance work and you'll get lots of websites that come up. You know, I'm not sure I'd recommend any one over any other one. You need to find a site that's going to be a good match for the type of work you're looking for. You're going to want to make sure that the economics make sense for you. And you're going to want to make sure that you understand what the consumer experience has been like with the site so you don't inadvertently end up getting work through a company or a third party where you don't like the experience.
Okay, Terry, any parting advice for people in this last minute of the show?
I think that, you know, if you're interested in providing your skill in a freelance way and you're willing to work with a looking for your each of your gigs, and you know that lifestyle is something that's attractive to you, I think talk to as many people as you can about who have done it before to try to get that advice, and you know, just at some level, just do it. Just find a way of packaging what you've got as your skills and find a client and see how well you really like it. Because a lot of times people get into it and after the first two or three times they go, this is really not for me. I didn't think I'd have to spend that much time marketing. I didn't think I'd have to spend that much time prospecting. I didn't think it would take me 6 months to get my first client. You know, that type of thing.
Always do your research. That's always good advice. Well, thank you both for joining us today. Terry Johnson is a business advisor with Practical Decisions and a manager at Maine Mentor Network. He's also president of the Association of Consulting Expertise. And Richard Bilodeau is an entrepreneur and professor at the USM School of Business. Today's sound engineer was Bill Johnson. Our theme song was composed by Mike Jandreau. Today's show will air again tonight at 7. Monday on Maine Calling, our medical experts return to answer your questions about COVID-19. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.